I'm Corin Nemec, and you're listening to Earthling Entertainment.
Prepare yourself for Earthling Entertainment, the perfect blend of paranormal and pop culture, with your host, Joe Wakefield and Ryan Lang.
I love it. I'm a fan of this. I'm here for it.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Earthling Entertainment with your hosts, Joe and Ryan.
That's right. I'm your host who's stuck in one of those sci-fi time loops. This is my 83rd time, and I have to get the podcast right this time because I'm starting to disappear. Oh, Joe Wakefield.
I hope we get to keep you this time around. Hi, guys. I'm Ryan.
Hi, Ryan.
Hi. Hi, Joe.
And hi, all you viewers / listeners. So, guys, if you're joining us for the first time, you might be wondering, what is this show? Like, what is it that you do? I'm going to tell you.
You will.
That's right. We're kind of a layer cake of paranormal and pop culture. So we have a thing called spooky stuff, which is a cryptid, a haunting, a myth, a legend. Then we have Earth Pop, which is pretty much all our pop culture stuff. We even have celebrity guests. Today, we have Corin Nemec, and he is going to just join us for a little bit of an interview. If you guys don't know, he played the original Harold Lauder in the sci-fi, not the sci-fi, what was it? The Stand. I want to say the Sci-Fi Channel because it was a miniseries, but it wasn't Sci-Fi Channel.
Okay.
But in my version, the best version of The Stand.
Yeah, no, I heard great things. I didn't get to see that one, but no, that's awesome.
It is awesome. And he was in Stargate. He played a character in Stargate for like 3 seasons.
Oh, so, cool. Yeah,
very good. Stargate SG-1.
Nice. All right. I like Stargate.
I do too.
Yeah.
And then after that, we have Disclosure Discussion, which is all about aliens, and we wrap it all up with Real World Weird. Ryan, what is real world weird?
It's pretty much something that doesn't fall into any of the other categories, and it's usually something either kind of freaky or it's usually pretty funny.
Yes.
So it's just something that we find funny.
But the
so.
Real world, it's happening here. It's not possibly make-believe.
That's right. That's right. It's stuff that actually happened, you know, is pretty much what we cover. You heard it here, guys.
I wanted to say that we actually covered Comic-Con last weekend. Unfortunately, Ryan couldn't be there, but we had a lot of fun. So, do you want to have any, you have any questions for me here? I could tell you all about it because me and Ryan actually weren't able to speak until right now.
And that's honestly the truth, guys. We've both been so slammed. I really want to know, what was it like when it comes to the crowd? Like, what was the energy like? What was everyone feeling?
Sure. Well, Comic-Con, Motor City Comic-Con in the summer is the bigger one. It is, and there's a lot of people. And I've been to WonderCon in Anaheim and Stan Lee's Comic-Con in LA and a bunch of other ones. And this is comparable in the amount of people. It's like a mosh pit. It's like going through a mosh pit.
Like a mosh pit. Yeah, and I figured, is this the same one that we went to a couple years back? It was huge.
It's pretty big.
Oh my gosh, the place is enormous. But it was super freaking cool. Like, you name it, you could find it. I got like a Fallout box when I went before.
Yeah, the mystery boxes; those are always fun.
So they must have had like a ton of cool stuff.
They did, and it was cool because we with the media pass, we were able to go around and talk to all the artists in Artist Alley. We talked to comic book creators, had a lot of fun, got cosplayers. We had the 501st from Star Wars. The
love
the group
them.
That they screen accurate suits.
Oh, dude, they were they were at the Weird Al Yankovic concert at Pine Knob when he did The Saga Begins.
Okay, well, that makes perfect sense.
It was amazing.
I'm with that. Yeah.
Absolutely incredible. And what's funny is I saw one of the dudes and I saw his hoodie or whatever, and I saw a couple of them. They had the Legion or whatever, hoodie on the emblem on it. And I walked up, I went, oh, you're going to be here for The Saga Begins, aren't you? And they were just like, like, I could tell, like, they were, because I could tell they were, like, doing business. They were, like, looking at the stage and stuff like that.
Ruh-roh.
Yeah, they're like, ah, shoot. I'm like, you could tell me. I won't say nothing.
Yeah. It's like, Ryan just goes running through the crowd. Guys, guess what? Like a cartoon character, dude, just people spread it and crowding around you.
Right?
Awesome. It'd be a good view.
The 501st Legion are coming.
Ha-ha! Well, you know, they also have Detroit Ghostbusters, and it's essentially the same thing, whereas they go to charity events and they raise money and they're all Ghostbusters, and that was a lot of fun. We talked to them too, man.
That's awesome. No, I didn't even hear about them. That's sweet.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And well, I guess that's pretty much it. I just wanted to say we had a great time. And if you guys check out our Instagram, we are posting stuff all week and until we run out of things. So it could be quite some time, but we got all kinds of coverage. And if you're in the Michigan area, make sure to check out Motor City Comic Con for sure.
Yeah, shout out to Motor City Comic Con for having us. That was so cool of them, man. That was awesome. I'm glad you guys got to go. I wish I could have been there, but man, I'm glad you got to go. That's awesome.
To be fair, though, can we say why Ryan couldn't be there? Ryan can't be there because he has a very demanding job, but not that he's taken time off to go to another convention that's like 2 weeks from now. It's not like Ryan is slacking here.
Thank you.
Tell him about that convention.
So it's going to be the Cryptids and Paranormal Conference, and it's going to be the fourth one.
Yeah.
And we got to go last year to the third, and it was incredible. Like, you guys should totally go if you're in the New Jersey area.
Or if you feel like flying. I mean, I don't know how much disposable income you have. And now that Spirit's gone, I'm sure tickets are very cheap.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens there.
Road trip.
Yeah, I think I'm flying United.
Oh, right.
So they're
right.
Not, and it wasn't too bad on the price. So,
that's good.
I don't know. Shout out to United for not being stupid expensive. But
we'll
but yeah,
see how
no.
that all shakes out.
RIP Spirit Airlines. It's a dang shame. I can't believe that happened. That's so crazy.
Yeah, we have a lot of thoughts, but that's not what we do here on the show,
right? You know, it is what it is. It's weird.
But back to the conference.
We're really excited because we're gonna be there. We're gonna have a ton of cool stuff to hand out and stuff like that. We'll have a spin the wheel kind of prize wheel like we did last time in case you ran into us in at the last conference. And me and Joe are just amazing to be around.
That's true.
And
we're just joys. We're rays of sunshine.
We're pretty good looking, you know, so, you know, it's all right.
I mean, we're
know?
Not horrible looking, at least. It's not like you're like, oh, shit.
So, you know, we're not like the ugliest you've ever seen. So please drop by and see us. I'm just messing around here. But yeah, you know, guys, please drop by because we'd love to meet everybody.
When you come to the New Jersey conference, if you're there, we have a prize wheel, like Ryan said, where you'll spin it and you can get several different things. We have beer cozies, we have stickers, we have official Earthling Entertainment coloring book, which you can grab on Amazon if you don't want to spin the wheel or you're not in New Jersey.
The bottle opener keychain.
We have notebooks, we have frisbees, and we have tote bags, and I think that's all of them. Oh, if there's one really small slit that says Ryan's soul, just for funsies, we'll see how that pans out.
What was that?
Anyways, guys, with that, let's jump into our first segment.
Spooky stuff.
The Reselka. In Slavic folklore, the Reselka, or the Reselki if you're talking plural,
yeah, it makes sense,
is a spirit associated with nature. It was believed that the Reselki took care of the waters, the forests, and fields. They were represented either as little or as young girls whose loose hair and pale skin. On rare occasions, male Reselki have also been described. It was believed that girls who drown themselves because of unhappy love become Reselki.
Wait a minute, what does that mean?
I guess,
what does unhappy love mean?
I
like they break up and they drown themselves?
I guess so.
That feels kind of sexist.
Yeah, it does feel a little
bit, yeah. I'm just saying. I've had some friends who were dudes who were just like, I'm going to jump off a building too.
Okay? Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, it goes both ways. But yeah, you're right. That is rather specific.
But hey, they did say that there was males too. So I guess maybe it's all inclusive. It's fine.
Well, it says here, according to some beliefs, a man could also become a Reselka.
Oh, well, there you go.
For example, in Sasnitsia Raion of the Chernihiv Oblast believed that people of any sex can be converted into these spirits if they died on Trinity Week.
What is Trinity Week?
Apparently, they retain their gender and become Reselki. According to myth, the first Reselka, I guess it doesn't say what Trinity Week is.
What?
It doesn't say what Trinity Week is.
Wait a minute.
So Trinity Week is a thing?
We're going to ask our producer. Producer, which is Lizzie, by the way. By the way, you guys, our wonderful producer who switches cameras and does a lot of the stuff that you don't see is Lizzie, and she's right here. She can't talk because she doesn't have a mic. But
say hi, Lizzie, everybody.
But that being said, could you please look up what Trinity Week is? And in the meantime, I'm going to dance.
In Slavic folklore. So, like, yeah. Trinity Week in Slavic folklore, often called Green Week or Reselka Week, is a major post-Easter festival celebrating the arrival of summer.
Good.
So there you go.
Good. All right. Memorial Day.
So, and it even was Resulca week.
Yeah, it's Memorial Day. I get it. It's fine.
Thank you, Lizzie.
I don't mean to, you know, simplify.
No, just, not at
in
all.
My head, that's how I will make that association is all I'm saying.
Right. Okay. Right. So according to myth, the first Resulca was Kostroma when she discovered that her newlywed husband, Kapalo, is her brother.
Ooh, yeah, that'd be rough.
The goddess drowned herself in a forest lake.
Hold on. Do you know there's a movie called Say It Isn't So? It's a very good movie. Early 2000s. Heather Graham and Kevin Kline, but not that one. Anyways, it's a romantic comedy where he falls in love with Heather Graham and then finds out that they're siblings. But it turns out there's a mistake and they weren't really siblings. And he goes through the whole movie trying to get her back while there's constant misunderstandings where she still thinks that he is her brother. And it is hilarious and 100% not appropriate for nowadays.
Interesting.
Yes.
I don't even know.
It'd be canceled so quick. Like, it's not a movie that Gen Z would be like.
Right.
Yeah. Early 2000 raunchy comedy.
It was time.
None of that have to do with anything.
It was a time. There were choices. Choices were certainly made.
Yeah. I love watching movies and from old other decades. It's amazing how jarring certain things hit you.
It is funny, right? It is funny, the change. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, the first Roselki found out her husband was her brother and did not take it well, right?
Correct. And drowned herself. Roselki are often described as beautiful maidens with pale skin, disproportionately long arms, and greenish hair.
I could dig on that.
Resulki were usually naked, and dressed ones were most often depicted in torn sundresses or kazovoratkas, which are Russian peasant shirts. The hair of a Resulki is always loose, which is a sign.
What does that mean?
It's, I guess, just like loose, long hair.
What does loose mean?
I guess it's just freely flowing.
Okay, so fair enough.
Not tied.
Just,
I don't know.
All out there.
That's just, yeah, all out
Let
there.
Let their freak flag fly.
Yep, that's right. That's right. Long that's hair, cool. Don't care.
Got it. You should have done that. You're the one with the long hair.
I was going to say, I usually have
no hair and I'm just doing this.
I got my hair tied up today.
All right.
Ryan, so
you're a beautiful man.
I'm really a Resulki. That's right.
Oh my God. It all. All the time. Yeah, and you've had some effed up relationships. I could buy it.
Oh, shit. Anyways. So it's always loose, which they view as a sign of evil spirits. So having the hair loose is like, I guess in Slavic times is not the way to go. I don't know.
It's kind of funny. Like, it's tight buns or nothing.
I guess
so. You loose, you're a demon.
Demon.
All right.
The devil.
Fair enough.
Okay. It was not customary for the Slavs to walk with such a hairstyle. So there you go. It says right there. According to some
Slavs,
I don't know.
All right.
According to some Russian and Ukrainian beliefs, Resulki have the appearance of small children. In Kherson, they are sometimes compared to dolls. In the Starobelsk Uzed, Resulki of both sexes were described. The boys had short red hair, and the girls had white ground-length hair. Resulki and Kampanisk, I think I'm saying that right, Kampanisk, were described as pale, almost transparent, and light brown or green-haired.
I mean, this feels like it could be a lot of different things, because if you think about it, this could be like how elves are described. This could be like how fairies are described.
I was going to say
in
fairies.
Ireland.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like the fae folk. There's a lot of times that
it's very fae.
Yeah. It's yeah, very much so. And it's,
I like
they
that.
Said that they like nature and everything and they like protect rivers. So to me, this just seems like, all right, this is just another word for fairy.
Right.
Like, or like that kind of nature, otherworldly spirit, extra dimensionals, whatever you want to call it.
No, definitely. And it's interesting. So,
in
like,
my head goes to Dragon Age.
We've right, gone into right. The fae. That's right. And
video games.
And you could change hair color in those games and stuff like that to all different kinds. So it's not like they, you know, have to. So,
to be fair, I don't think we should be basing anything on a fantasy video game, but I hear you.
Hey, I love Dragon Age. Love that game. It's a great game.
Fair enough. That was never up for debate. Look
Good.
Behind your head. I have every novel. There's 5 Dragon Age novels.
Awesome.
Yes.
Awesome. In the northern regions of Russia, and particularly in Ukraine,
The description of the Rasalki significantly differs from more common beliefs. They are described as ugly, shaggy, hunchbacked, and large-breasted women.
So it's not all bad, yeah.
Not all bad. The Rasalki were believed to be at their most dangerous during the Rasalka Week, which was also, oh, here we go, also known as Green Week and Trinity Week. So it wasn't here.
All right.
In early, I could have sworn that it was, and I was just like, oh.
That's good, because okay. I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, that's like a big piece of knowledge. Well, we wasted a lot of time because of you.
So, yes, as we know now, so it's in the early week of June. At this time, they were supposed to have left their watery depths in order to swing on branches of birch and willow trees by night, combing their hair with a hairbrush made of fish bones. Swimming during this week was strictly forbidden.
Okay, so their version of it was just kind of like an ugly monkey kind of thing.
Kind of? Hunchback. Like
they said hunchback, they said ugly, right, you know, right? So, yeah, you're right. I think they just have orangutans.
I'm all Greg. The lest Rasalki would drag a swimmer down into the riverbed. A common feature of the celebration of Rasalka Week was the ritual banishment or burial of the Rasalki at the end of the week, which remained as entertainment in Russia, Belarus, and the Ukraine until the 1930s. Rasalki were said to have positive traits as well. It was believed that they love children, protect them in every possible way, save them from wild animals, and take them out of the forest.
I mean, that's cool. That seems like the fairy folk.
There you go.
Either that or they trick you.
That's a possibility always. Sometimes Rasalki rescued drowning people. A cheerful personality was attributed to them. At night, they tumble, play, dance, and laugh. It was believed that where the Rasalka runs, there will be bountiful harvest. Rasalki were said to have the ability of shape-shifting. It was believed, for example, that they could take the form of squirrels, rats, frogs, birds, or appear in the form of a cow, horse, calf, dog, hare, or other animals. Many, many animals.
I mean, it just feels like it's an excuse to be like, ah, look, it's a Rasalki!
It's a Rasalki!
It's a Rasalki!
Pogo's a Rasalki.
Rasalki!
I knew it. So
yeah, I mean, it's like, why have I, they exist. Why have we never seen one? Because it was a cow that time.
When I saw it was a squirrel.
All right. Fair enough. Yeah. Mm. All right. It solved everything. It's like religion. You got it.
You've covered. Got it.
Don't ask questions. Here's all the answers.
Just the main thing is do not forget to stop asking questions. Don't do that. So, these water beauties were also capable of causing storms, devastating rain, and crushing hail, while also being able to cause the river to overflow, flooding pastures and crops. Rasalki are also said to run faster than any horse and swim faster than any fish. So, did you know that there are different types of Rasalki? Let me tell you. And I'm going to try my best.
All right.
With these names. Vodyanitsi are said to live in rivers and mill pools. They are relatively harmless and are believed to be baptized girls, unlike other Rasalki. So other Rasalki are not baptized. So these are the baptized ones.
All right. So that just feels weird that they would have a hierarchy based on baptism. But all right.
No, that does. We've covered many a cryptid where baptism has a big part to play in how it goes. Like it's a thing. So Vodyanitsi are often the wives of Vodyanois. The term is sometimes used as a synonym for the Rasalka. So that brings us to the Laskatuki. They are dangerous Rasalki, which are said to haunt waters and fields. Their name comes from the verb laskatet, meaning to tickle.
That doesn't seem threatening. Like, I'm going to get you. I'm going to mess with you.
Just you wait, Joe. Just you wait.
I'm going to get you.
They have a very playful personality, and sometimes their jokes go too far. When Lakotaka sees a man, she drags him into the water, tickling him to death.
Oh, no! Is that like a weird euphemism, or do you think he actually gets tickled to death?
I think that yeah, you're in the water and she's tickling you.
Oh,
and
yeah, fair
there's
enough.
Really you not drown. Yeah, yeah, you're gonna drown.
All right. For God's sakes, we told you to quit tickling them in the water. Like, there's so many bodies.
Stop that. Bringing us to the Mavki.
Okay.
They are water.
I like the tickling one, man.
I do
that
like
one's
the tickling
my favorite.
One. That one's a good one.
All right.
They are water and forest spirits in Ukrainian folklore. Mavki are described as beautiful maidens with green hair, and sometimes were said to have transparent backs through which all of their internal organs were visible.
It's interesting.
Yeah. Mavki lured men into the woods where they tickled them to death.
There's more tickles. All right. I'm down with this, man. We never had a cryptid where it's like, motherfucker gonna tickle you.
Like dude,
you're
like
die.
Like, that's some.
You're gonna get tickled down.
I hate getting tickled, though. Honestly, that actually would suck.
Please, I have to.
It starts to hurt. No, oh, I'm not down with being tickled.
You're such an asshole.
I agree. Don't tickle me. That's right.
Oh, he shit himself too.
Well, that's I might. I might.
Right.
It could. So, moving it right along here, the Balotnitsy.
Yeah.
Are the most beautiful of the Rusalki, often inhabiting swamps, marshes, and big lakes.
Because if you think of hot women, you think of marshes.
They are described as having a pale, smoky body, blue or green eyes, and dark brown hair tucked away by sedges and forget-me-nots.
What?
The onlyest thing.
What is a forget-me-not?
It's a type of flower.
Really?
Yeah, and it's called a forget-me-not because you got to water it a lot.
Do you just have that knowledge?
I do. My mom used to have them.
Okay, fair enough. All right.
So, the onlyest thing, that's actually what's written here, that spoils their appearance is the goose legs instead of normal shins.
Ah. You know what?
It's always the goose legs.
They were a 10, but we looked down and it's like,
now forgot leg day.
7 at best.
Yep. To hide them, Balotnitsa sits in a huge water lily. She lures travelers to her with a sad cry for help, after which she drowns them.
Okay, but if you walk by a swamp and there's a woman who you can't see her legs because she's sitting on a flower in the middle of the water and says,
and she's beautiful.
Hey, come here. I mean, is this a red flag not pop up to you at least a little bit?
Guys are so dumb. He's like, well, obviously.
It's like, she wants me.
She wants me. No, guys are so dumb. Are you kidding me? Like,
I don't remember being that dumb at any point, but fair enough, man.
Case in point.
I was very skeptical. Like, I would still ask my new girlfriend a week into dating her if she actually liked me. Yeah, and then that usually went downhill from there. But still. Yeah, doesn't show a lot of confidence.
Hey, you are now, Joe. That's all that matters. You got there. You climbed that mountain.
That's right.
You did it. So, that brings us along to Moriani.
Oh my God, we're still doing these?
How
many of these are there?
There are a few more.
This feels like a very broad, like, cryptid. They're like, it covers all these different looks and all these different things. They're either ugly or they're pretty. They're red hair or they're all white, though. Very racist, this group.
In Russia, Rusalka sulks you. You know what I'm saying?
All right, sorry. We can finish.
So, the Moriani.
Yes.
They are a marine species of Rusalki. They are generally described as tall maidens with hair that resembles sea foam. Moriani live near...
Sounds kind of gross.
Yes, pretty gross.
Yeah.
They live near coastal cliffs and pose a serious threat to ships. So maybe they like lure them in.
I mean, that seems like, yeah. Like, once again, there's like, such like a wide variety. It's a siren. I mean, yeah. This feels like a generic term at this point.
All right. That brings us to the.
Hold on. That one other thing that you forgot to say.
Okay.
It really hates Sherlock Holmes.
It does hate Sherlock Holmes.
Read the name.
Moriarty.
There you
it's
go.
Morietti.
I know.
But Moriarty. Oh, yes. Sad. Very well done.
Okay.
Well done.
It wasn't very good. I wanted
it's
to make
okay.
I wanted to make that joke better, but I still feel like we committed.
I appreciate the two films with Robert Downey Jr. and you win. The Brodnitsy. They are the guardians of the Fords. And also the kindest of the Rasalki. They help travelers and watch over children. If they were in danger by the water, Brodnitsy will rescue them.
All right, well, that's cool.
So that's a good one.
Yeah.
So now that brings us to the Labasti.
How many more do we have?
Three more.
All right.
They are the most vicious and dangerous
dicks.
Rasalki. They settle along the banks of rivers, large swamps and lakes, hiding in reeds and other thickets. Labasti are described as decrepit old women with large breasts and sharp claws. They're as tall as an aspen, and they can attack anyone who happens to be near. They drag their victims into the water, tickling them to death with their nipples.
Really?
Yes.
That is the best thing I've ever heard. They're like, I'm going to get you.
They get
I'm
you.
I'm going to get you.
And they get you.
They get you. Oh, man.
These evil old grannies will nipple tickle you to death.
Can we just be honest? Like, there are worse ways to die. Like, I'm not saying you want
to. That sounds horrible.
Yeah, but it's not as bad as getting.
Good.
It's
Lord.
Not as bad as being covered with gasoline and lit on fire.
I'm over here looking at the scales. I'm not kidding on that one. It's. Yes.
When it's just, here lies Jeremiah. He was tickled to death by the nips of an elderly woman who turned out to be a creature.
Watch out for those Labastis.
Labastis.
And
they're the Labastis.
They're not the Labastis with their sharp claws and tickling nipples. That brings us to...
Tickly nipples.
The Polodnitsy.
Why?
They are noon...
That's so random.
They are noon demons.
What happened to inspire this folklore?
Someone got tickled to death by nipples,
like,
Joe.
It seems like the drunkest recount of how your buddy, like, you kill your buddy, drown him in the water, and the cops ask you what happened. You're like, all right, so hear me out. There was this old lady. She had really big boobs, though, okay? She was, like, at least still an eight.
Gigantic boobs.
Yeah. And she just started tickling him with her nipples the whole time. And the thing is, and I was like, no. But you know, I couldn't go in there because it was like gross.
Not going to lie, it was kind of hot.
Yeah.
Is she using her nipples? Or is she tickling
She is using her nipples. Nipples.
Like she's like,
yes.
Like, I'm going to get you. Like, let me just.
She tickles you to death
with her.
Sorry, when I said their nipples, I thought that might be. It's the Labasti, the Labasti's nipples.
Yes.
I thought No.
No. Although, if she was just tickling the victim's nipples, that would also be pretty funny.
That is really.
Yeah, like, because not everybody is ticklish in the nipples. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, if you do it right.
I don't know.
You got to do it right, Joe.
You know what?
Want me to show you? No, I'm kidding.
Oh, my. Earthling Entertainment, After Dark.
It is getting hot in here. All right.
And to be fair, the thermometer says 77 degrees. Anyone who knows about filming is you got to kind of turn off the fans and air conditioning.
Yeah, you know, you got to do what you got to do. So, all right. So let's get away from the evil nipple lady.
We have to?
So the Polodnitsy.
This is the best part of the episode.
I that's why I was like, oh, this is going to be great. As soon as I saw that, I was like, yes.
I do have to judge you a little bit, though, because that should have been the last one. Unless your it next should've. One is going to beat it.
No, it's probably not, but I just, that's why I wanted to surprise you, though.
You did.
Yeah.
You did.
So it worked.
Oh, all right.
So these ones are what's called noon demons. They were usually portrayed as young women dressed in white, which roamed field bounds. They assailed folk working at noon, causing heat strokes and aches in the neck. Sometimes they even caused madness.
These things just look like whatever the hell you want and do whatever the hell you want. They just they just stopped naming it and gave them all the same name, man.
Oh, my neck. Ugh. You know, like, ugh.
It's messing with you. It's around noon.
Yeah, it's it is around noon.
Oh, yeah.
Those little sons of bitches. Is that a Polodnitsy?
Heat stroke.
Polodnitsy.
sweaty, swamp-ass Dante. Sorry.
Paul Nitzy in the house. All right.
This is a weird episode.
Ferengi are creatures from a 16th century legend that are described exactly like mermaids from European folklore. They descended from the Egyptians, who pursued Moses and the Jews, but drowned in the Red Sea. Their horses turned into half horses, half fish. Ferengi are cursed dead people with a deaf and hoarse magic voice, who are destined to remain in this guise until the end of the world.
Well, that was just Tolkien.
That one was pretty cool, though.
Yeah, it was pretty cool, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, so that one was a little cool for the last. That's why I left that one for last, yeah.
And that was just a grab bag of
a whole lot of Russian mermaid crazy folklore.
I think there's too many variations. It threw me. There was like 50 different things on that guy.
There was a lot going on, but to be fair, I mean, it all tracks. It's all Ukrainian and Russian. This is all like the stuff that they all believe. So I covered as much as I could because I want all of us to be as informed as possible here on Earthling Entertainment when it comes to spooky stuff.
All right. Well, yeah, you know what? I enjoyed that. Guys, did you enjoy that? And hey, we're covering a lot of cryptids and hauntings and stuff every week. And
we are.
If you have something that we haven't covered yet that you suggest, you remember you could always hit us up at earthlyentertainmentpodcast@gmail.com or any of our socials. You know, I usually respond on Instagram. I think Ryan's on TikTok. Are you still running the TikTok?
Yep, still on the TikTok.
Perfect, perfect, perfect. So yeah, guys, there you go. That's this week's spooky stuff.
Thank you, guys.
I liked it. So I'm actually pretty excited. I got to sit down with Corin Nemec, and Ryan, tell them about Corin Nemec.
On today's episode, we're joined by a guy whose career has taken him from battling
the Gua'uld
on Stargate SG-1 to surviving Stephen King's apocalypse in The Stand. You've also seen him pop up in everything from Supernatural and Tales from the Crypt to creature features like Lake Placid versus Anaconda.
The really wacky ones are my favorite.
Awesome. He's an actor with serious genre credibility and a career that's covered sci-fi, horror, action, and cult classics for decades. We're excited to welcome the one and only Corin Nemec to Earthling Entertainment.
Huzzah!
How's it going, man?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Just busy. It's my second podcast today, but I'm also editing this film that we just recently shot.
No worries, we'll be punchy. Would it be safe to say you're a prolific actor? I mean, I think you've done every genre under the sun.
No, I mean, I haven't done Middle Ages. And I haven't done kind of like, you know, like the biblical times or Roman or Greek times or, you know, like ancient times, anything like that. Nor have I played a caveman, at least not in a movie.
Well, you know what? I'll give you the caveman, but you kind of dipped your foot into fantasy a little bit. I know it's not Middle Ages, but you did Dragon Apocalypse. I mean, that's something.
Oh yeah. It used to be called Dracano.
Really?
The dragons coming out of the volcano. Is that the one you're talking about? I never saw the movie. excuse me. I had fun making the movie. It was funny, though, because the interior cave set was like, it was all like paper mache. It was so highly flammable and poorly made. I mean, I was expecting a sleeve stack to come around the corner at any minute.
Oh, man. Well, you know what? That's a reference that everyone listening to this podcast is going to understand. We're a Land of the Lost kind of people. So
nice.
In light of that, just expect us to hit a few of the movies that you might not expect questions for.
Finally.
How did acting start for you? How did you begin your journey?
I started acting when I was 12 years old out in Los Angeles in a actor's workshop for youth called Center Stage LA, directed by Kevin McDermott. And he was the artistic director there. And I did a showcase for agents and managers about 6 months after I started studying there. And I got an agent. I started auditioning. I started landing jobs right away. My first movie, though, what really catapulted me into a really competitive stature was the movie Tucker by Francis Ford Coppola. I played Noble Tucker, the son of Jeff Bridges in that. And then I came back from that and ended up going on to the series Webster, playing Nikki Papadopoulos. Nikki, Webster's live-in cousin. I lived with Webster. We shared a room for a year. And then after that, you know, I did a TV special called What's Alan Watching with Eddie Murphy and Fran Drescher and Peter Michael Getz and Barbara Barry. And obviously Eddie Murphy was in it, and a bunch of other people. It was great. Then went on to do I Know My First Name is Steven, which was a very dramatic miniseries about a young boy who was kidnapped and held by a sick freak for many years of his life, and finally escaped when he was 14. And I played that character, Steven Stainer. I Know My First Name is Steven. I got an Emmy nomination for that. So once I got that Emmy nomination, it like, again, elevated me into a different kind of category of competitive acting. And then went on to do Solar Crisis, this big flop, but it was this huge budget sci-fi film done in the late 80s with Charlton Heston and Jack Palance and Peter Boyle and Tim Matheson. I was one of the leads in that as well. I thought that was going to be a big breakout movie, and it just didn't do anything. It was unfortunate because it was a very cool sci-fi movie, very cool sci-fi movie. And then it was shortly after that that I landed Parker Lewis, you know, and that went on. And I got Parker Lewis because of that Eddie Murphy special I did called What's Alan Watching? The characters were kind of similar. The style was kind of similar in ways. And that's really what got me the role of Parker Lewis. And then it wasn't long after Parker Lewis that I did The Stand and of course went on to do Drop Zone and Operation Dumbo Drop and a whole bunch of other movies. Sure.
The Stand, that miniseries was actually the first time I ever saw you. So when I was in my teens and I saw you in Stargate, I was like, is that Harold? Oh man. I immediately wasn't sure if I trusted Jonas Quinn at that point. I'm just saying.
I wouldn't blame you. Yeah, he was a sleeper. But yeah, man, that was a great time working on The Stand. What a great group of people, what an incredible cast. Mick Garris, a phenomenal director, was what a wonderful guy to work with. Stephen King was on set all the time. He was there, you know, pretty much the whole entire shoot, you know.
Was that intense?
I got so used to seeing Stephen King around. I was like, big deal.
Didn't even bother you anymore? Awesome. Well, what did he say about your performance as Harold? Was he happy with it?
Well, the auditioning process for that. Yes, I got the breakdown for the character Harold Lauder, and it was the breakdown was written as the book character is written. You know, very very over. You know, heavy set and you know lots of acne and all this and. Yeah. I was like, why on earth am I auditioning for this? But Mick Garris had seen me read for Sleepwalker a couple of years before that Brian Krause ended up getting, and he did a great job, me and Brian and friends. But he really, really enjoyed my take on the character. And even though they auditioned apparently dozens and dozens, if not 100 or more people for the role of Harold that fit the description, he and Steven just didn't find an actor that they felt played Harold the way that they imagined him or whatever. And so Mick had suggested that he let me come in and read, because Steven was, from my understanding, was not really a champion of the idea of Parker Lewis playing Harold Lauder, you know, and
he didn't quite see it. Yeah.
Yeah, the way I physically looked and everything and my headshot and all my demo reel. And he's just like, this guy is not Harold Lauder. Like, you know, so finally Mick got him to let me come in and audition. And I went in as perplexed as Steven was. But I understood the character and I felt I had a real good grasp of him. I love doing the character acting thing. I really love embracing an identity that's far outside of myself. It's a great joy. So I went in and I did the audition. I was very well prepared. I had a great time. I really, really enjoyed playing the character. And when I left the room, before I got home, there was a message on my answering machine, because we still had answering machines back then.
Sure.
That said that they were offering me the part. I mean, I couldn't believe it. It was very rare that happens. Wow. That you find out that quickly.
Well, you had to embody the character for them to have seen it. And how do you do that when you were looking into something so dark? Is it easier, do you think, to get into a dark character or a happier, lighter character? Or what do you prefer?
It doesn't really matter either way. I mean, I didn't find Harold Lauder to be particularly dark as much as just, you know, misunderstood and frustrated. And you know, so that wasn't really how I approached the character. It's not like when I played like Richard Speck or Ted Bundy, you know, those
bit of a difference.
Yeah, and I played other characters that were, you know, dark like that at a movie called Blackout and one called what was the one with My Brother's Keeper, and that was a fun one.
Well, and, do you prefer, you know, to be more villainous or more heroic?
It's, you know, the villains are fun to play because generally speaking, they have far more dimensions to them than, you know, than the regular straight laced, you know, good guy, you know, because mostly bad guys have to live between two different worlds. They have to live in the world of all the good people, and then they get to live in their world of whatever it is that they're doing, you know, that doesn't jive with society. So they have to wear two hats as a character most of the time, you know, one way in public, a different way in private. And that, you know, that just allows from an acting standpoint to really, really polarize a character in two different worlds, you know, and that becomes fun creatively to do.
Excellent. Well, if we were to jump ahead a few years, there's a show, obviously, you know, you were on it, called Supernatural that had like 19 seasons. Considering they had so many episodes and so many seasons, how do the fans, do you still get people talking about your 4-episode character arc?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, mainly because my character is a cousin, technically a cousin to the Winchesters. So that kind of separates the character from some of the other characters that came and went. But, you know, that role was originally supposed to be a 10 episode arc. But apparently that season, they had so many storylines going on in season 6 when it first started that the network told them to just trim it down, streamline it. There's too much going on. And so, unfortunately, our storyline got the axe after 4 episodes, or it was, they knew that they had to axe it at 4 episodes. So the whole storyline changed from what it was supposed to be, which was a real drag. Cause I was like, dude, 10 episodes of Supernatural, bring it on. Cause if 10 episodes go really well, your character is more likely to come back.
Sure.
Four episodes.
Well, who do you think is more a bigger fan? Is this the Stargate people or is it the Supernatural people when they come meet you?
There's actually a crossover between those two communities of fandom. I found a lot of people watched both, and I find that quite interesting. It makes sense to me actually as well, because stylistically, the way that they're shot, kind of the way that they're written, there's some similarities in there in some ways, you know. Yeah. And they're both shot in Canada up in Vancouver, but
that's why they're both beautiful looking.
Yes, it's great up there. But yeah, you know, just having those 4 episodes was a blast. It would have been great to have done more, but it was awesome to have been a part of that, you know, that show.
Well, you know, I wanted to say, when you actually jumped into the character of Jonas Quinn in Stargate SG-1, you were basically replacing one of the main characters, the character of Daniel Jackson. Did you feel any pressure to live up to that character, or were you just trying to create your own and move forward? How did you handle all that?
Yeah, no, I just, you know, look, it's a great opportunity as an actor to be a part of a franchise that has been as successful as Stargate has been over the years. It was a huge blessing. I had a great time working on it for the time period that I did work on it. And, you know, it's it's just, it won't, it's one of those franchises that just keeps coming back. It keeps coming back. And it's just that compelling of a storyline, you know, I think. And so coming in to replace, so, you know, the Daniel Jackson character, there's no replacing Daniel Jackson, you know, but just coming in as my own character, as if none of that other stuff, you know, exists really, you know what I mean? It's kind of just, I didn't try to develop a character that would be seen as a replacement for Daniel. You know, I wasn't trying to do that. You know, I was just trying to create a character that I enjoyed playing and that, that could work within the way the storyline is structured.
That is awesome, man. Well, what, do you have any fun set stories? I mean, you shot in most of it, obviously all of it in Canada. Was there any kind of fun thing that happened when you were outside? Or,
I mean, you know? I'd say the only real story that, you know, that's worth telling from an exciting standpoint was just when we were shooting up in the woods, up in the mountains, and a huge brown bear came on down into what's called the circus, where all the trailers are parked, and what's called craft services, where all the snacks are kept between scenes and all that stuff. And so the bear just came out of the woods, walked right into the circus, and so to speak, went right into the craft service tent and just started eating food off the craft service table. And they had to call animal control, and, you know, they had to, you know, get it out of there. They sequestered us in our rooms. You know, we weren't allowed to go out of our rooms. Everybody was like, or in a car or whatever, until they got it removed. But I guess they darted it or whatever, threw it in a pickup truck and drove off with it into the sunset. But that certainly slowed down production that day.
That is awesome, man. I mean, it makes sense. That tracks. Bear goes after food. Yeah. All right. Fair enough. All right. So you know what? I'm just going to throw some honorable mentions at you. These are just some fun films that I saw, and I was really happy to see you in. Lake Placid versus Anaconda.
Uh-huh. That,
very good sequel, because I'm a big fan of the straight-to-video sequels when they start getting really, really off the wall. Once we get to, like, Tremors 7, I'm in. That is my favorite. Also, you were in Mansquito, Sand Shark, Sea Beast. Yeah. Come on, man. Could you have any fun of these lower budget genre monster flicks? Do you have anything you had fun on set or any experiences there?
Well, for the ones I was a producer on a number of them, and the ones that I was able to work on as a producer, I always had more fun with, because we had more creative control over the script and what we, you know, like Sand Sharks, for instance. Myself and Stan Spry, my buddy, who was the executive producer on it, and the writer, who was also a producer on it. Well, the script was always written as a comedy. It's kind of tongue in cheek and kind of ridiculous and absurd. And that's what drew me to it in the first place when Stan approached me with the project to make it together. And so, but the, some other producers and the director, there was kind of a civil war going on, because half the creative team wanted to change the script completely and take it very seriously and approach it, you know, dramatically, because they thought that doing it as a comedy was going to ruin it, you know, or doing it comedically was going to ruin it. And so we had to just stick to our guns and just say, well, we're not doing it then. You know, I'm not going to be a part of it. This, that, the other, the writer's going to be like, well, whatever. So they're like, ah. So, you know, it went through, and we did it as a comedy. And it has stood the test of time in terms of those ridiculous, you know, creature features from Sci-Fi Channel back in the day. And there was another one called Dragon Wasps that we shot down in Belize. The same team, and I was producing on that as well. And we had a really fun time on that. We got to change the script up and do some really hilarious stuff, like you know, these biologically enhanced, like half dragonfly, half like prehistoric wasp That's been genetically mutated in some lab that they've escaped, and they've gone wild up in the Amazon, and there's this gang of drug dealers up there. Originally, they're supposed to be these rebels that are like fighting, you know, for their you know, for whatever. But there was no, in the script, there was no like unrest. There was no reason. Like, what are they fighting for? I was like, let's just make them drug dealers. They're the bad guys. If they're fighting for freedom, that doesn't make them the bad guys, you know?
Yeah, you don't want to humanize your bad guys too much.
So we got to make them drug dealers, and that also introduced what I thought was a pretty hilarious add-in to it, was that we made the drug dealers think that the drug gang is run by this kind of voodoo priest, and they live way up in the mountains and all that. And the dragon boss don't mess with them at all. They don't come around their farm. They don't go anywhere near them. And so he thinks he has some kind of power, you know, mystical power, but it turns out that they just have an aversion to whatever is in cocaine. They're like allergic to it, you know, or they don't like it. They don't like to be around it. And so in order for us to infiltrate the dragon wasp layer, we have to lather ourselves in cocaine paste and go into the cave in order for them not to know we're there.
See, that tracks perfect. I love it. That's the only information I need. That is in my queue.
Oh, dude, yeah, it's hilarious.
All right. Well, you know what? Speaking of ridiculous stuff, there's a film coming out soon, Chickenhead. Could you tell me a bit about
it? Well, I'm editing it now. So that's what I thought. It's not going out too soon.
Fair enough. Well, that's what I thought when you told me that you were editing all day today. I was looking at your credits, and I'm just trying to be like, I want to ask about Chickenhead. Maybe you have something to tell me?
I'm very excited about it. You know, the challenge is that, you know, we approached it. We shot it in a very short amount of time, and so we approached it from a documentary standpoint. So it's a mockumentary. It's, you know, me and my writing partner, Matt Florio, and producing partner, we wrote it together. And, you know, how do you make a film inexpensively in a short amount of time? Originally, we wanted to do the whole thing improv. So we just had written, like, you know, the story. And we were going to go and just shoot. We were going to interview people and just ask them questions and get whatever. And then, you know, but then we realized, well, what if our runtime is too short and we don't have a real movie? And what happens, you know? And so we ended up writing, the full scripted version of it with all the dialogue. And we're glad we did. It's very witty, very funny. But the challenge right now in the editing process is that we had to shoot it like a documentary. So there's no, you know, there was no way to really approach it like, okay, we're going to start with this master shot, then we're going to go to this shot, we're going to zoom in on this character, they're going to say their line, we're going to cut over here, we're going to get this. We had to basically just get the cameras that existed within the story, and some cheating, a little bit of cheating. We had to get the cameras that existed in the story and some security cameras and other stuff like that, and just run everything as if it was live and just shoot whatever we could shoot. And then worry about it later. And so now me and the editor, Artie Glacken, we're worrying about it later. We have all the footage we need. It's just a jumble. It's a spaghetti of footage. And we have to go through and noodle through it and get everything lined up, figure out exactly, you know, how are we going to tell this story. So it's, you know, so it's almost like a found footage film in a way, too. You know, it's kind of like piecing together something that you found later on and you don't even know what's in it yet, you know. So it's been very challenging, and that's what I'm about to dive back into here shortly. But Chickenhead, it's a horror comedy, a mockumentary. We got a really fun cast. Myself, obviously Matt Flora is in it, but David Faustino from Married Children is in it. He's an old friend of mine, great guy. And Keith Coogan is in it. Jason London will be in it. Along with Tara Reid, it being this documentary style film, it's not, I think most people, when they hear this idea of Chickenhead horror comedy, they're going to imagine like, you know, Meatballs, you know, or Up the River, or some kind of like real, just, you know, Scream 12, I don't know, you know what I mean? Or Scary Movie with a half man, half chicken. But it doesn't have that. It doesn't have that kind of a feel to it. It's much more of like The Office meets Blair Witch Project with a half man, half chicken.
That's awesome. It sounds like it's got to be really fulfilling creatively. I mean, to be have so much control and be able to play with everything. I'm imagining you swimming through a sea of actual film, you know, just to get the image right, even though it's all digital.
Yeah, sometimes it feels like you're drowning, not swimming. But, it's when we finally get to shore scene by scene that we're like, OK, we got something. You know what I mean? It's working. So that's the most important part.
Oh, good. And hey, man, is there anything else you wanted to tell us that you were doing right now? Any appearances or any other projects you want to promote?
I got a bunch of projects coming out. Everybody can just kind of go to my IMDb or go to my Instagram or Twitter or X, whatever it is, you know. I am the letter I, the letter M, and my name, Corin Nemec. That's my handle across all those. And my YouTube, which I haven't really messed with in ages, but I got some fun stuff up there on Corin Nemec TV. Otherwise, man, you know, I got a bunch of projects coming out. You can check the IMDb, see what's listed there, and keep an eye out for it. But if you are interested in seeing something I've done in more recently, you definitely should be watching the movie Place of Bones with myself, Heather Graham, and Tom Hopper. It's a thriller set in the Wild West days. It's kind of like Misery meets Hateful Eight. And I highly recommend that.
That's it. I feel like I'm forgetting something, but I think we're good.
Well, if you forget anything, just email me back. We'll definitely do this again down the road.
Right on. Well, good luck editing Chicken Head, and thank you again. I really appreciate
it. Hey, my pleasure, brother. It's been fun.
All right, bye.
Cheers.
And there you have it. I hope you enjoyed that interview. I love talking to him. He's a really nice guy. He's definitely in a hurry because he was like waiting to edit the show.
Oh,
yeah, because he's doing this movie. We just talked about it. It's fine. But he was fun. He was
awesome.
A fun guy to talk
to. No,
about.
That was great, dude. Awesome.
Hi, guys. I'm Bree.
And I'm Allie. This is Off Script.
If you think about it, books are potential scripts for movies.
When this adaptation happens, typically it's disappointing because they went off script.
In this series, we will be talking about how off script they went.
Awesome.
And with that, we are going to jump into
the Earth Pop Report, talking about everything to do with Earth pop culture.
Woo! Here we go.
All right, so just a couple things. You know, we had an interview, so we don't need to do too many here. But I will say, Mark Plyer, he is the guy who is a YouTube guy, and he did the Iron Lung movie. He spent his own money, was very successful.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, he was talking about, like, he doesn't know how the movie's going to come out. And it turns out he is making it a YouTube exclusive, which makes sense business-wise because he probably made a deal with YouTube because he got famous on YouTube. As a film buff, I think it really limits the amount of people who are going to like be able to see your movie. If it's only on YouTube and you can buy it, but it's just digitally owned on YouTube. I don't know.
That is a weird way to go. But I mean, maybe that's like the majority of his fan base, right?
No, it is. It's like his whole fan base. And he probably is going to be honest, it's probably a way he can make the most money out of it.
Yeah. I mean, so it's most beneficial to him. Maybe not necessarily what he's doing.
Yeah.
Like the creation itself.
I don't have much more to say. I saw the movie. I liked the movie. It's weird. I liked the movie in concept. I liked parts of the movie. The overall actual movie kind of bored me. But I do think it was good. I need to revisit it. And it sucks for me because I don't think I'm going to buy it on YouTube. I guess I might rent it on YouTube, maybe.
Okay, well, I don't know. Fair enough.
Do you have any interest?
Honestly, I don't think I've ever even heard of it, being honest.
Fair enough. So the next thing is Sam Raimi. Why is there fireworks outside?
Oh, it might be the storm.
Oh, that's rain? That's not like fireworks. Jeez.
Yeah, no, it's storming out.
Man. All right. Michigan weather.
Yeah.
Okay, so Sam Raimi is remaking a movie from 1978, and it's a magic, and it started Anthony Hopkins back in the day as a ventriloquist who is tormented by a dummy. You know what I mean?
And I think I saw this.
You probably did. You know, the haunted dummy trope has been around forever. Like Twilight Zone did it. Like Goosebumps did it. So, yeah.
Honestly, and the screenplay comes from Freddy vs. Jason writers Mark Swift and Damian Shannon. So that's exciting because I love Freddy vs. Jason. That's like honestly one of my favorite, like just kind of, you know, of like the goofy horror of that era, right? Like the Bride of Chucky.
Yeah.
Stuff.
It's the horror comedy era. They definitely leaned a little bit more into comedy. It's funny that you say Bride of Chucky because, you know, it's the same director that did Bride of Chucky did Freddy vs. Jason.
Oh, well, then this is going to be great.
Yeah. So, no. It's not the same director who's doing this new one. I'm just saying because Sam Raimi is doing this new one.
Okay.
I'm saying Freddy vs. Jason and Bride of Chucky was the same director.
Oh, well, love that man's work. It was incredible.
Oh, man. So, George A. Romero. You know him, the zombie guy.
Yeah.
The guy
Night of
the Living Dead. Well, he had basically Night of the Living Dead, then Dawn of the Dead, then Day of the Dead, then Land of the Dead. Do you know all that? Those were all connected as like a series.
Yeah, I knew he, it branched.
Well, he was working on Twilight of the Dead, which was like the last one. And long story short, they're still making it. Obviously, he has passed away, so he has nothing to do with it besides the fact that he did the script. It was his idea, blah, 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 blah.
Okay.
But they're making it, and Kate Beckinsale apparently is going to be the lead in it. That's Celine from Underworld, if you don't know.
Okay.
Yes. Well, I was trying to think of something you would know.
That's one that I know.
Serendipity, the romantic comedy with John Cusack.
Not very serendipitous.
I do not know. you know, HBO is doing that new Harry Potter series.
Who is?
HBO. They're doing that new Harry Potter series. Yeah. Well, Jeannie Weasley, younger sister of Ron Weasley.
Yeah.
The young lady that they got to play her in season one. Apparently, her family has made an announcement that they are leaving the show and she will be recast for future seasons.
Huh.
No reason was given, but it said it was a family decision. And considering that in the first book, she shows up pretty much just in one scene at the train station, I think. I don't remember anything else. But later on, she ends up being like, you know, a love interest to Harry. So maybe they just got cold feet about like the commitment because you're signing paperwork that are basically saying you're going to have to work 12 hours a day 8 years from now.
I was about to
say. You know what I mean?
And she's
signing your little girl up to that might be a little extreme.
No, you know, you got to respect what the family wants to do.
That's true. And I hate to say it, but I don't think anyone's really going to notice because once again, she's not in the season one very much. Like, unless they're doing a whole big subplot that I'm unaware of.
So you're right. Yeah. She doesn't really become relevant till later.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, she becomes very relevant later, but
until then.
All right. So here's something that's a little bit more up your alley. You know, Young Frankenstein?
I do.
Yeah. Do you know they're making a prequel series?
They're not.
They are.
No.
It's officially ordered. It's called Very Young Frankenstein. Ah?
I don't know.
You see what they did there, Ryan? Well, Zach Galifianakis is going to be in it, and Taika Waititi is going to direct. So Taika Waititi is the dude who did What They Do in the Shadows, that TV show and that movie. He also directed Thor, Love and Thunder, a bunch of stuff. He's the kind of zany, not New Zealand. What was the other one? Is it New Zealand? Yeah, he's a New Zealand guy.
I'm going to give a big ol'.
He's done a lot of fun comedies.
On all of that, honestly.
You would
No. I'm aware of those things, and I'm not a fan. I'm being honest. Like, I never found that vampire show funny. I've watched tons of it. Not one bit of it is funny to me. Nothing. I don't get it. What We Do in the Shadows is not funny.
We may be enjoying a new host next week where tryouts are starting. If you would like to try out to be my new co-host, remember you could hit us up at earthlyentertainmentpodcast@gmail.com.
So chances are this new show is going to be just as unfunny.
I want to kick you somewhere. You're not planning on having more kids, right?
Mm-mm.
All right, good.
It's okay to be wrong.
It's
okay. So finally, this is kind of cool. The original Paranormal Activity is headed to Broadway.
But what about the theater?
What is?
The original Paranormal Activity.
Dude.
They're making a Broadway play.
That's awesome.
Well, you know, it's kind of funny because next week we actually have the two stars from Paranormal Activity that we're interviewing because they have a screening at MJR.
Whoa.
So yeah, we're going to interview them next week's episode, and they're going to do a Q&A and do like signings and the whole nine yards at Troy, Michigan on the 30th. So if you want to check that out, if you're in the Michigan area, you can go to that. And that reminds me, I couldn't plug MJR this morning. So
I was about to say, isn't that going to be at MJR?
MJR Theaters. I really do like MJR. Anyways, here is the ad.
Don't just see the movies, experience the movies in IMAX at the MJR Troy and MJR Southgate Cinemas. See the movies like never before in stunning 4K laser IMAX projection on a massive screen. Feel the movies with heart-pounding IMAX precision sound and experience true movie-going bliss in our fully powered luxury recliner seats. Get your IMAX tickets at MJRtheaters.com for the world's most immersive film experience, now featured at the MJR Troy and Southgate Cinemas.
Yeah, so if you like Paranormal Activity, it's going to be on Broadway. I mean, that was pretty much the whole last headline there.
Honestly, I could see where that would do really well.
Yeah, I mean
you, just with like simple tricks on the stage, you could do like really creepy stuff.
It really does work because the more you just explained it, you're right, because it was a low budget film that was set with like kind of a lot of still angles and a lot of creepy atmosphere, which lends itself perfect to the stage.
It really does. Honestly, like
I want to see it.
I kind of want to see it too. Like, I feel like it almost would be more enjoyable to go see it on the stage.
Well, you know what? I've never actually been on and seen a play that was like a horror play. Like, I mean, I saw Dracula, you know what I mean?
But it's
like
Phantom of the Opera, if that counts.
I mean, but that's what I'm saying. It kind of doesn't really. Like, I want to see something like Repo the Genetic Opera.
That movie, man, I want to love that movie. Like, I feel
quit
like
telling me these things you don't like.
I've watched it a couple times.
You really don't want to work here anymore.
I guess not. You know,
next thing, Ginger Snaps came out on the day that we're recording this episode, and I bought it, and it was $10 on digital, and I rewatched it. And you know what, Ryan? It was just as good as it always was.
I'll bet you it was great.
Yeah, thank you. All right, Ryan's got his job back. Anywho, the last headline is always what we do last, is unfortunately when a celebrity passes away, and Ryan is going to take it away from here.
Legendary voice actor Tom Kane has sadly passed away at the age of 64. Kane was beloved for voicing Yoda in Star Wars The Clone Wars, Professor Utonium in The Powerpuff Girls, and countless other animated characters across television, film, and gaming. Yeah, I just saw about this, and yeah, like, there was tons of game characters where I was like, That was him.
It's amazing how much work voice actors get under their belt.
Like, yeah, there was a few characters where I was just like, oh, man, that's awesome. Like, oh, but man, rest in peace, because, you know what I mean? Like we always say that when it comes to, we anybody who's involved in anything in entertainment, anything that's enhanced our lives, you know, is behind the scenes, in front of the camera, behind the camera, doing the light, you name it, we're going to mention you.
That's true.
We hear about
if
you
if we
passing,
hear about it, because sometimes I don't hear about it.
We're working on it.
Yeah.
We will know.
Ted Turner died. Just throwing it out there. He put cartoons on 24/7. He unfortunately also put news on 24/7 of CNN. Ted Turner is kind of a weird person to talk about because there's a lot of things that he did that wasn't good, but there's a lot of things for entertainment that he did was great. Turner Classic Movies is a good example. He made old movies available on TV all the time when otherwise they would disappear. So Ted Turner died too. Pour one out for him.
I feel like, yeah, pour one out for him. I feel like that's one of those dudes where it's like, I know the name, but I didn't know like about him.
He owned Warner Brothers, but then again, he sold Warner Brothers to AT&T, which kind of almost tanked Warner Brothers, and then it's been passed around to corporations since, so it's no longer like it's more of a corporate studio than a studio. So it's a mixed bag.
It's a mixed bag.
Ted Turner.
You know what else is a mixed bag is the recent UAP news we've all been kind of flooded with lately, and I was feeling like maybe we could talk about that.
All right. Do you think you want to talk about that on Disclosure Discussion?
I do. Let's do it.
Disclosure Discussion. Ha 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 ha. It's about aliens and stuff.
So how have you guys been feeling about just now we sign into, like, every single news station now is talking about UAP. It's been
really making its rounds.
I mean, I feel a little validated because as a sci-fi kid, my entire life, I've been like aliens and conspiracies and X-Files and all this stuff. And now everybody's talking about it. And you know what the really weird thing is? How many people are just like, oh, I guess aliens do exist. Who cares? They're just moving out of their life.
Yeah,
like,
we got bills to pay.
I guess there was aliens. Meh.
Well, work's at 4. Yeah. So I got to go to work.
It's like Disclosure. I thought it was going to be like a boom, and it turns out it's just like a piddle. It's like a little bit of water. Kind of wet.
Right. So I'm flipping through my sources.
Okay.
And this and that. And I'm like, I keep seeing main news stories about 4 different types of completely. No, this is it. This is 4 different species of aliens we are talking to. And I'm like, okay, this has to just be like an offsite. No. Like, literally, I found so many articles from so many. So this is what I found.
All right. So 4 different aliens that we're supposedly talking to. Let's see.
4 alien species recovered from crashed UFOs, ex-CIA researcher claims. On last Thursday's Diary of a CEO podcast, 89-year-old Stanford-trained physicist Dr. Hal Puthoff made a striking assertion. The U.S. has recovered at least 4 distinct alien species from crashed UFOs. Puthoff, who had once been a research scientist in the CIA's Advanced Aerospace Weapons System Applications Program, never provided any direct evidence that proved that he himself had not handled any of the biological material that was reportedly retrieved from crashed UFOs. Here's a quote. People who have been involved in recoveries have said there are at least 4 types, Puthoff said. His claims echoes testimony from David Grush, a former Air Force intelligence officer who testified under oath to Congress in 2023 that the U.S. possesses non-human biologics recovered from dozens of crashed spacecraft. The Greys, Nordics, Insectoids, and Reptilians have been named by Dr. Eric Davis.
Okay, wait. That's fair. Those are all the ones I knew. I thought you were going to tell me some stuff I didn't know. Are the ones that we supposedly are confirmed talking with.
And that's where I agree with what you had to say. This is why I want to talk about it, because it is validating.
Sure.
That's why I wanted, because usually I would just be like, our audience knows this. We know this. But like, it's like the fact that everybody now is talking about it, I'm like, all right, let's hear what they're saying. So, by Dr. Eric Davis, a well-known colleague of Puthoff, and also an advisor to AAWSAP, which was that super long name earlier, who made the statement at the 2025 UAP Disclosure Fund conference that was attended by Reps Nancy Mace, Anna Paulina Luna, and Eric Bolitson. Dr. Eric Davis and other UFO experts claim that each group possesses a humanoid body with 2 arms and legs. Nordics are defined as human-sized race, about 6 feet tall, looking like Northern Europeans.
We knew about them, obviously.
Characteristics of reptilians include upright stance, scales on the body, long tails, and human-like limbs. The gray aliens are easily distinguishable, small-sized aliens without hair and huge eyes, like those scenes in movies such as Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Insectoids, also referred to as mantids, are alien species with a resemblance to
praying mantis.
Yeah. These claims are largely based on...
Which honestly would be the scariest to come across. Like, Nordics probably wouldn't even bother me because it would just look like an elf. And grays, I'm so used to because it's like, how many times you've seen a gray alien? Like, don't misunderstand. I'd be freaked out.
You wouldn't be scared.
It would still be like, oh, okay, at least I know what this is.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same way it would be like if I saw a rhino. It'd be like, oh, crap, it's a rhino. But it's not like...
A reptilian would be scary, too.
A reptilian would be scary. I think insectoids would be scarier to me.
I have to agree.
A reptilian would still be close enough to, like, stuff I know. Whereas a giant praying mantis, I mean, bugs are creepy. Bugs freak me out.
Is it going to move like a bug?
Man, I don't want to live in a place of giant bugs.
No. Thank goodness that we don't have that much oxygen anymore. The more the oxygen we have, the bigger the bugs.
You know what makes me... Yeah, you're right. There was a time in history that was way back when there were giant bugs because of that.
Yep.
Because there were so many trees, and they didn't develop ligament, I think it was, yet. or something like that. There's a
you got me there.
There's a bacteria that breaks down trees, and it didn't exist for a long time. So trees would fall over.
Like I am immortal.
Well, no, they would die, but they would fall over, and they wouldn't really decay. So it just kind of piled on top of each other. So there was a period of time where there was just logs everywhere, and then those actually ended up becoming some of the coal deposits and diamonds and stuff, not just, like, you know, dinosaurs.
That's right, guys. You get to learn stuff here.
Yes. I have no idea if that was a magazine, a book, or a documentary, but that is in my head as true.
I love it, though. So all these claims are largely based on witness accounts rather than available physical proof. According to Dan Farah, the filmmaker behind Age of Disclosure, who interviewed Putoff in his podcast, the people who could testify have declined because they fear for their safety.
I mean, that's fair. That's how many scientists have died in the last, like, 6 months?
It's been crazy, and more pop up of older cases of scientists that disappeared in the same way years ago, involved in the same programs. And I'm just, it's, we all knew this, right? Like, this is something that we've known for so long that government's going to come after you. You know, the men in black are going to tell you to, you know, keep quiet or else, you know, and
I just think it's funny that a scientist is more dangerous than a fireman.
Well, the knowledge,
it's a
bro.
Tough job, guys.
The pen is mightier than the sword.
Research and such.
But so I wanted to talk about this because, yes, I, like you said, I felt seen. It's good to see people talking about what we already know, guys. We're like, I know if you listen to this podcast, you already know this. This was kind of like a quick one, but it's out there right now. People are talking about it. This is a big deal. The fact that major news outlets are actually specifically saying, okay, evidently four races that of alien that we know of. So what's the next
thing? I'm just happy there
step?
Wasn't like another one. Like I can wrap my head around all that. You know what I mean? If they were just be like, and then the energy greed, like the plasma alien, like anything that's not, I don't know, I guess physical body as I know it, like anything that was energy based, that would be hard to wrap my head around. They're like, okay, so these are, or like a hive mind. Like, I guess the praying man, the insectoids could be a hive mind. Huh.
It definitely could be. And we talked about Neil deGrasse Tyson. You guys got the book, got it signed, which is awesome. But no, he's been making news lately for just being like, show us the alien. Literally, I love the fact that he's doing this. He's such a smart dude. And he's out here literally saying what we've all been wanting. Just show it to us. Stop with these soft leaks. We know. Show us the alien.
The question is, like I brought up at the beginning of this, will anyone actually care? When an alien steps out, they'll be like, huh, all right. Everybody keeps saying that like religion would like collapse because of like all the beliefs. And I just don't believe that. I think people would just be
adaptable. I don't think so either.
I think like seriously, religion would just be like, oh yeah, well, God created them too. It's fine.
Yep.
Like they wouldn't even sweat because I don't know how many people actually would fall apart by the knowledge of aliens.
There are, I will say, not to specify any because I don't know that much, but I do know that there are many, I've talked personally to people of different beliefs. There are some people who truly do not believe in aliens and they only think they're demons.
Yeah, but isn't that a moot point? It's from another plane that isn't Earth. So like, so whether it's hell or a different planet, whether it like has horns and is red because it's a demon, or it has horns and it's red because that's the animal that grew up on that planet. Like, is there really a difference, honestly?
That's my fear is I think that they don't see it that way. You know what I mean? Like, they see it as like some, you know, apparition from, you know, their religion. You know what I mean? Like, they as opposed to actually being like, hey, we're all human and that is an alien. Like, you know what I mean? Like we are from here. He is from Glorthos.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like,
freaking Glorthos.
Glorthos. You know, I love Glorthos.
Oh,
people,
man.
Glorthian,
great bars.
Glorthians are so hospitable. Amazing weed. You know what I'm saying?
That's what you went for?
Yeah.
You don't want death sticks.
That's right. I don't want to sell you death sticks. Yeah. I want to go home and rethink my life. Bye, guys.
Bye, guys. And that is goodbye to Disclosure Discussion
this
week.
That certainly is.
Yeah, yeah. So, guys, if you were ever wondering how many races there were, apparently four. All the other ones you talked about.
We'll see.
We'll see.
This is what's been disclosed in mainstream media.
And we discussed it.
And we're underground media.
All right, let's talk weird. Guys, we're closing off the episode with some real world weird.
We are?
Yeah, we are.
Yay!
Yay, yay. Oh, wait, here's the chime.
Real world weird.
Cryptids going to college. A college museum in Illinois is embracing the strange and unusual by inviting artists from across the country to submit cryptid-inspired artwork for a massive upcoming exhibition.
Finally.
This is what we've been waiting for. This event.
This is the art I care about. This is what the people want.
Titled, Spooks or Spoofs.
Not the best title.
Should have worked on it a little longer.
Yeah. Maybe not go for the first draft.
Is being organized by the Sharp Museum at Southern Illinois University Carbondale and is scheduled to run from August 21st through December 11th. Organizers say the exhibit will feature roughly 50 pieces celebrating legendary creatures, folklore, and mysterious beasts from around the world. Traditional artwork of all kinds is welcome, though AI-generated art has been officially banned.
Which makes sense.
The museum specifically highlighted Illinois legends like Murfreesboro Mud Monster, a Bigfoot-style creature reportedly seen in the woods of southern Illinois.
Yeah, but I like the thing that they call him the Mud Monster, because it's also like the skunk ape. There's a few stories of like Bigfoot-type creatures living in like marshes and swamps.
And that's why I truly do believe in Bigfoot, because they just have adapted to wherever it is they live.
It's also wherever we're not. You know what I mean? Like, people aren't going to, well, I mean, some people go live in the swamps, but for the most part, not a really habitable place.
Bigfoot's over here like, really?
You'd be the worst. You know, we were talking about bugs earlier. Mosquitoes, man. Can you imagine living in like one of those? I don't know if they actually exist in this way, but in my head, it's like they have the pathways of like wood and stuff over the water and like the little shanties. And
Yeah.
It's a magical place in my head until you think about the mosquitoes.
Right. And then we were talking about giant bugs earlier. So then that just makes me think of Jumanji with those giant mosquitoes in Jumanji. My God, that traumatized me as a child.
Well, the breaking through the glass was a tough one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Mud Monsters, a local to this college. That's cool, man. Go with your local stuff. For us, we would probably do Bigfoot. Yeah. No, wait. What's local to Michigan? The Melonheads.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. That's right.
Which is funny because it's not a cryptid. It's just like poor, sick children.
Or the Dogman.
Or the Dogman. Yeah.
Dogman. That's a little better.
All right. Yeah.
Okay. So. So the Mud Monster, a Bigfoot-style creature reportedly seen in the woods of southern Illinois, along with the infamous Piazza Bird, a terrifying dragon-like monster once said to haunt the cliffs near Alton and feast on the humans.
I like it.
But according to organizers, artists are not limited to local legends and can base their work on any cryptid they choose. What makes the exhibit even more fitting is the university's connection to legendary cryptozoologist Lauren Coleman, who attended the school back in the 1960s before eventually founding the International Cryptozoology Museum in Maine. Artists interested in participating have until July 1st to submit their work, with accepted entries expected to be announced later in July.
I kind of want to draw a picture. I'm not a you good should. Enough artist that's going to get in, but like, you know, I used to paint.
Shoot
I
your shot. Draw.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you like this one? I got this at Comic-Con. It's the same as the poster up there. It's the Mothman cake.
It's sweet.
How does this look, producer?
It's sweet. It's sweet. Getting a thumbs up over there.
All right. I like this shirt. I wish I had the artist's name on hand, but we're doing a social media post of his stuff. So we'll add it.
We'll put it out there.
We'll put it out there.
Yeah. No, good stuff for sure.
Yeah.
So that brings us right along to the spookiest job in town.
There's kind of a theme for this week's Real World Weird.
A Georgia city is officially leaning into the paranormal by searching for its very own director of paranormal affairs.
I would get a desk like mount, like little with your name, like director of paranormal affairs. Like, isn't that the coolest title?
That's a pretty friggin' cool title.
I know.
I almost cursed.
I wanna move there just so I can get this job.
I think it's in the bag, bro.
It's not worth moving. It's part-time. All right. It's a part-time job.
Let's start packing.
All right. Go ahead, buddy.
Tourism officials in Mekan recently posted their unusual part-time position as part of an effort to expand the city's growing reputation for ghost stories, hauntings, and strange local legends. The role would essentially make the hired candidate the lead guide for Mekan's haunted history tours, blending storytelling, local folklore, theatrical performance, and a little bit of mischief along the way.
You got to have
might steal your wallet.
Oh,
I'm kidding.
That's less cool.
I'm kidding. According to the posting, the person chosen for the job would act as a narrator, historian, host, an occasional troublemaker while guiding visitors.
What is that?
Like, every
once in a while, you can punch someone in the face. He's great, but every once in a while, just like steal your candy bar.
Just make a little
knock
mischief.
Over your Coke. Yeah, like just to be a jerk. I went to the bathroom. He took the toilet paper. I was pissed.
Got your note.
Like, ha ha, paranormal. Just run away. Like, instead of his job description, he could be kind of a dick. I don't know.
Kind of a dick.
Like, sir, it said I was able to be mischievous.
We're doing this.
Mischief man. I mean, the job would be worth it. Honestly, if you could, like, have a job where every once in a while you could just do something really ridiculous and not get in trouble for it because it's part of the mischief part.
Like, is there a fish in my pocket? Why is there a sardine in my pocket?
I'm thinking of all these different weird things, right? Oh, my God. Like, it's like you get dressed. He sewed my pocket shut. Like, what the hell? That took so much time. Why would he do it?
And then he just gets bored. Little taser shock to your butt.
They can't all be gold. Sorry.
Mischievous.
Just kind of a sorry. All right, go ahead.
No refunds.
Why would you want this job? Mischievous is in the it's fine.
That sounds fun, honestly.
Yeah.
While guiding visitors through tales of unexplained phenomena, scandals, heartbreak, and alleged hauntings tied to the city's past. The bizarre listing appears to be part of a larger push to capitalize on paranormal tourism, which has become increasingly popular with communities known for strange history and supernatural lore. Visit Mekan CEO Gary Huit.
Gary!
Gary Huit.
You know, all the time I've talked about Gary, it's been this guy. The whole
CEO.
Time. Ask him about some of the things we've said he's done.
I will. He explained that modern tourists are often looking for experiences that feel unusual and memorable rather than traditional sightseeing. So, yes, he might have a little bit of trouble along the way. So yes, somewhere out there, a person may soon be getting paid to professionally talk about ghosts and to, you know,
tie
mess
people's
with
shoelaces
you.
Together.
Yeah, tie your shoelaces together. And
so the story of the haunted as he's just doing something like ridiculous.
You
like,
dropped your pocket.
Yeah, he's walking.
Dropped your pocket.
He's just straight up doing like a casual tour as he's just like putting potatoes in people's exhaust pipes and stuff. Just the worst things.
Just
hilarious.
Just pranking people all day. Like, honestly, I love that. It's just like, I thought we were like, this is like a literal ghost hunt. You've just been, you gave me a wedgie earlier. Like,
this guy, though, is essentially, let's be honest, his job is just like, you're a tour guide.
You're a tour
guide.
Like,
they're being really fancy about it, but they're like, you're going to be a tour guide to our haunted stuff.
We had everybody sign a waiver. Yeah. You can mess with them. Have fun.
It's like, but, you know, no, it's, you're a tour guide and it's part time, but you could occasionally smack someone in the face or just do something ridiculous.
How about the butt? Can I smack them upon the butt? Is that allowed?
No, probably not. HR will not allow that because that crosses the line from shenanigans to like sexual harassment.
It said troublesome and mischievous.
Yeah, but sexual harassment. It's still 2025. I know our country backslid a lot, but we're still not doing the sexual harassment thing for the most part.
So, well, I'll just steal their wallets.
Yes. Okay, robbery's fine.
All right, come on, guys.
Real
so
world weird.
So that was real world weird.
That was real world weird. Ryan, close us out, man.
And that was also our podcast for this week. Thank you guys for tuning in. Thanks for everybody who tunes in every week. Please don't forget to download the podcast. It really is the best way to support us. And everybody who tuned in for their first time, yes, we're this ridiculous every single week, and we've been doing this for a very long time.
It ebbs and flows.
So, yeah, go ahead and jump into the past episodes, and while you're there, go ahead and give them a download, too, because, like, yeah, you want to see more? We want to do more.
That's
and
true.
We need you to do more.
That's also, right. Also, subscribe to the YouTube, guys.
Yeah, oh, yeah, that's a big deal, because, yeah, we're doing video right now. We got the lovely Lizzie Wakefield here as our producer working behind the scenes, helping us make this video possible. So, guys, yeah, give her some love. Leave a comment. Give a like. Give a follow. And no, guys, once again, thank you so much for tuning in. We have fun doing this every week.
It's true. You pretty much said it all. I'm sorry. That was hilarious. All right, guys. So from everyone here at Earthling Entertainment, see ya.
And goodbye.
Hey, everybody, I'm Andy.
And I'm John. We're the hosts of Zombie Strains, the podcast where we watch all of the zombie movies in chronological order.
It has been a wild ride so far, discovering where and when all our favorite zombie tropes originated. Things like the first cannibal zombies,
Bowery at Midnight, 1942,
the first rage zombie,
Teenage Zombies, 1959,
and the first homicidal zombie,
Dr. Blood's Coffin, 1961.
If you love zombie films as much as we do, join us on Zombie Strains.
Find Zombie Strains on your podcast app of choice.